Pretty much everybody knows about the movie Back to the Future. But the original script for the movie didn't have Marty McFly driving a DeLorean. Instead, he walked into a time travel booth the size of an industrial fridge. And he was famously played by actor Eric Stoltz before being replaced by Michael J. Fox, who shot half the movie at night after shooting TV series Family Ties during the day. And the plot revolved around accidental incest, a topic you wouldn't call comedic gold. Yet with laser focus from director Robert Zemeckis and a prime summer release date in 1985, Independence Day weekend, it became the highest grossing film of the year and made stars out of the diminutive Fox and character actor Christopher Lloyd.
Are you looking for ways to be a part of the community through low-stakes opportunities like volunteering? What about making friends that are really cool or have some common interests? Well, I'm here to tell you that at CITR, you can come volunteer at Volunteer Wednesdays, happening every other Wednesday from 12 to 3 with a really fun activity each time, like making signs or button making. Not only is it a great break from outside stress, but a great opportunity to be a part of the community. For more information, you can visit CITR's Instagram page at CITR and Discorder.
You're listening to Movie Maverick Mike and Logan the Extra on CITR 101.9 FM. So, Logan, this was a classic movie. What did you think of it?
You know, a lot of classic movies and a lot of ones that are supposed to be conglomerating the culture of the era, a lot of the times I'll watch them and I'm like, eh, this hasn't aged well. But this one sure has. Maybe the time travel part helps that out a bit. But it's still a really fun movie to watch, and it's something that, you know, you should watch it because it is a cultural icon, but you should also watch it because it's a good movie.
I don't think I've seen the word heard the word conglomerate used in that context.
Well, so, maybe I used it wrong. But.
Good use of it. Yeah, no, it was a pop culture icon. I'm old enough to have seen this in the theaters in 1985 with a date, actually. And yeah, it kind of blew people away. It was a time travel movie done right, which seems odd now. But back then, there wasn't a lot of happy, fun time travel movies.
Well, now that you mentioned the refrigerator-sized box, that made me think of Doctor Who and the TARDIS, right?
Right, right, yeah.
A time-traveling machine about that size, but only on the outside, of course. But yeah, so was there a lot of time-travel movies before this?
They were all serious, and the story, if you look up the story about this one, Robert Zemeckis and producer Bob Gale, who were successful from Romancing the Stone, went to Universal with Steven Spielberg's backing and said, we've been sitting this idea for years, let's do it. And it was not the right time. Teen movies were more raunchy at the time. This was kind of a family movie in some ways. And like I said, time travel was more esoteric and brainiac kind of feeling. It wasn't the fun part. In fact, during the movie, the scenes with the DeLorean, which came afterwards, that was some of the ones that Fox filmed at night. The Zemeckis said, we're just going to go through time. We're not going to explain it too much. We're going to talk about the power usage, but how it works and everything like that. We just want to get there.
Yeah, there's the flux capacitor and it needs 1.21 gigawatts, and that's about all they say, you know.
Yeah, and I think they had a lot of fun with the pain of going having to get there. And I think it's funny to find out they stumbled upon that. But I mean, I think the movie was it was fun in the setup for it. It was fun in getting him into the 50s, and they spent a lot of time exploring, you know, what things were like back in the day when Marty says, I want a Pepsi free. Well, you can't have a Pepsi unless you pay for it. So it had a lot of things going for it until it got to the plot where he discovers the shenanigans that his mom and dad are up to as youth.
Yeah, but I think some of the fun comes from there's some real caricatures in here. I mean, Marty McFly is kind of the quintessential teenage boy who doesn't care about school and only cares about his girlfriend and wants to skateboard anywhere, despite Michael J. Fox being like 24 when he played him.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That one was a bit hard to slip by. And then Christopher Lloyd playing Doc Brown.
That's right, yeah.
And, that character was like, you could sum up that character in one sentence, or in two words, which is mad scientist.
Yeah.
But it works out pretty well.
Yeah, and I think you have a bit of, sure, archetypes or stereotypes going against each other. But I think one of the things I remember watching from the beginning, director Rob Zemeckis, even to this day, his movies aren't as popular as they were, they're very focused. I've always said with Zemeckis, you always know where to look at in the scene and on the screen. And there's not always a lot of subtlety, and there's not always a lot of symbolism. But for a movie like this, you didn't really need that. It was kind of like point, 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 point.
No, if I remember, there's a lot of dramatic looks across the camera, or zooming in on people's faces, where it's, you know, yeah, we're not getting too much subtlety, but none of this movie was subtle. It was, you know, like you said, we're suddenly traveling through time and everything is really 50s, and, you know, that's how they played it.
Before I get to the songs, I want to talk a little bit about the cast, because I think at the time, nobody in the cast was a hit or was a big draw at the time. And this was kind of I think Spielberg was kind of producing these kind of teenage movies. I mean, this was after, I'm pretty sure this was after E.T., yeah, and after some of his, you know, Poltergeist, one of my favorite movies, which doesn't have a lot of songs we can talk about. But so they had this kind of homey, small town boy kind of feel to them, or small town girl kind of feel to them. And this movie did as well. So it to look back and say, oh, Christopher Lloyd and oh, Crispin Glover and Michael J. Fox, that they were all, you know, not necessarily a gamble, but they weren't having to do a lot of work at this point. They just did what they did. So,
yeah. And now that you mention it, I don't know how many of them really went on to long, illustrious careers. I mean, Michael J. Fox, he did some stuff after, but it's not like he's... this is what he's known for. If someone says Michael J. Fox, you think Back to the Future.
Yeah, he did a couple of movies. He did a Vietnam movie with Sean Penn, the name escapes me, and then he did The Secret of My Success. So yeah, he was highly bankable after this movie for what he did, yeah.
And like we mentioned, he was acting in Family Ties while shooting this movie. They were doing it, you know, both at the same time.
It's worth looking up the story about how Eric Stoltz was replaced and how Fox came in. Again, it's one of those stories you're like, you can't imagine anybody else. You can actually find footage of Stoltz talking to Christopher Lloyd as Marty McFly, the same costume, the same setup. It's a little bit spooky in some ways, but it's neat to see. But yeah, I'm gonna talk about the cast a little bit. Christopher Lloyd is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I was, for another production, I was talking about him for Adam's Family. So he was a ghoul in Adam's Family. He was a Klingon in a Star Trek movie. He got a start, a Klingon villain. He got a start playing wacky, I forget the guy's name, in the TV series Taxi. He was an angel in Angels in the Outfield. I think he's kind of underrated, but because he's been a character actor that has done all of these bizarre things. Do you remember Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So he's
that's also a Zemeckis movie too. So yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. But no, he's done a lot, and he is someone who was pretty big from this cast before and after, if I'm not mistaken.
But I think he was kind of a character actor. He was like, we need someone wacky, or need someone a bit obtuse, or, you know, a little bit off kilter to play a role. And so when he was off kilter, obviously, as Doc Brown, but I think that carried on from him too. One thing that's interesting to me, too, is that the girlfriend, Marty's girlfriend, Jennifer, in this movie, the actress, wasn't in the sequels. And then another one, it's a really odd thing that I was, when you look back in it, that the henchmen, there's a bunch of teenage kids that the bullies that chase after Marty McFly, include Billy Zane, who's, do you know that name, Billy Zane?
It rings a bell, but I can't put a face to it.
I know, it's funny because I still think he's also underrated. He's the protagonist in Titanic. So it goes Leonardo DiCaprio.
Kate Winslet?
Yeah, Kate Winslet. Yeah, Oscar nominated. And then Billy Zane, yeah.
Huh.
And he was excellent in that movie, and he kind of went up and down.
Oh, yeah.
The CAD, yeah. And he did a few movies after. He was actually in a superhero movie. We're going way off kilter here. But so, yeah, the cast was really strong in this one. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like one thing that was important was the chemistry between Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd is that, I don't know how they did it, because like we were just saying, there could have been someone who wasn't Michael J. Fox, and they were planning on that. But those guys, their interactions, you see it also later in the sequels, but their interactions are really good. And they're playing caricatures, so it helps. But yeah, you can feel the chemistry, I feel.
Yeah, and apparently the story goes that when they auditioned, Michael J. Fox auditioned, like he was a guy, and they said it was good. It wasn't golden, but the story goes that after the movie and after a couple sequels, they realized how to feed off each other. I mean, I think they got into the characters strong enough that I do this, you pick up on this, and it goes back and forth. Yeah. So I think the chemistry kind of developed. And I think, you know, assuming Fox was shooting the movie at 2 o'clock at night on whatever they had, passes for Red Bull in 1985, then you know, there wasn't always time to be electric with your co-stars. So I want to talk about the song. So there's two songs I want to talk about. The contemporary song, well, in 1985, Huey Lewis and the News, The Power of Love. This does go back to what I said about Robert Zemeckis, the director, having it so focused. Because the song, in my notes, the song appears three times in the movie.
Well, it's a bit odd. They kind of stretch it over a long sequence. Because I don't know how long the actual song is. Do you know?
I'm sure it's just a standard three, four minute song. Yeah.
Yeah, but it stretches over like 7 minutes and we have breaks to it.
So I'll describe that. It starts at the beginning when Marty's trying to get to school. They play the song in the background. And I mean, you know, even to this, they still put pop songs in movies. Yeah, obviously, yeah, we talked about Barbie last time. Yeah. So this was you know, pretty standard procedure. Let's have some mid-level pop band, Huey Lewis and the News at the time, put a song into the movie. So it sort of plays in the background. And then Marty McFly and his band audition.
They're a talent show at their school.
Yeah.
And then so he gets up there with the three other guys, and they play a rock version of the song, The Power of Love.
Without singing, yeah.
Oh, without singing. I forgot about that. And then one of the people that they're auditioning to are
the judges.
The judges, yeah, that's the word, judges. They're all the teachers or whatever. One of them stands up and tells them they're too loud. But there's more than meets the eye with that one.
Yeah, because that was Huey Lewis, who was big glasses and kind of brushed back hair. So it was kind of a funny cameo.
Yeah, so, you know, his song and he's poo-pooing it. Although this is, you know, a rock cover of his song. So, you know, who knows how honest he was when he said that.
Yeah, it was obviously tongue-in-cheek. If you knew who Huey Lewis was, and I mean, I don't think he was a big enough pop star that you go, hey, it wasn't like Michael Jackson on there or something like that.
No.
And so you kind of laugh at the fact that he's, like you said, poo-pooing, rejecting his own song. And then later on in the movie, Marty has a moment with Jennifer, and they have a kiss.
His girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it pops out there. That's the power of love.
And then we quickly discard Jennifer as we go to the future, but that's another
thing.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why they change actresses. But if you want, we can listen to the song right now.
Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Hey there! Do you like sweet and sentimental stories and songs?
Do you enjoy a pleasant chat and a giggle with pals? Then you're gonna love our show, Love Notes, here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Every week, a new guest selects a great love of their life, a sibling, a romantic partner, a best friend, and we get to make a show about the stories and songs that make up their love.
Join us on this journey for the ears and the heart every other Tuesday at 10 a.m.
You're listening to Logan the Extra and Movie Maverick Mike on 101.9 FM CITR Radio.
One more thing to say about Huey Lewis in the News before we move on is that this pop song, which I kind of like, but I would call it a standard rock song, was actually nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song, which was pretty odd at the time. So
yeah, I mean, usually Best Original Song are these really meaningful or emotional songs, and you know, this is a love song, so it's got some emotion in it, but it's not something that's going to change your life.
Yeah, and it's not a song that you're like, that's the best song I ever heard. Yeah, I don't care what movie that's in, I just want to hear that song. Like some of the Barbie ones were like, maybe that's a bad example, because some of those are...
No, I think that's a good example. Like, did one of them win?
No, it's still coming. The Oscars are still coming. As
for
of
Barbie,
this recording.
Right, yeah. So yeah, we'll have to check in if What Was I Made For wins Best Original.
Yeah, well, actually, we'll see if we can be prescient here, depending on the broadcast time, because it's probably going to win.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but no, this one, I mean, I didn't realize when I watched the movie that it was written for this movie. It's kind of a background song in the movie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I mean, we have a bit of fun with Marty McFly playing part of it, but, you know, that's... I mean, I guess that's their gimmick, because the second song we're going to talk about is also Marty McFly playing it, and it's probably the song you think of when you think of this movie.
Yeah, so Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry. I was looking up, I couldn't find how they got the rights to this song. Like, that was still a popular song. I mean, some of those 60s songs, Woolly Bully and stuff like that, were still, what's the one, Around the Clock and stuff like that. I think that was
they're still getting
50s.
Listens and played on the radio.
Yeah. All I could find out was that Chuck Berry was hesitant to have this song used in a movie, but
paid
for the rights to it. Yeah.
Do you know why?
No, if listeners are happy to email in and let us know the background to this song. I think they wanted a song that was of the time, 1955. Yeah,
well,
not the 60s, the 50s.
It's supposed to be, you know, as he talks about, it's a bit in the future for their time. But the other thing is, I guess it's supposed to be a young boy's guitar song. I mean, I was just looking at the lyrics, and it's really like, you know, it's about this guy who only knows how to play guitar, and it's okay.
So again, I'll expose my ignorance. I'm not sure. I don't think Chuck Berry was the original recorder of this song.
Oh, really?
I think he made it a hit. Yeah, it was some sort of semi-popular Southern song at the time, back on the New Orleans, right?
Huh.
And that he made it into a hit. But yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised about that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess it's got a legacy of covers, if that's true, because now, if you asked anyone who's, you know, under 30, I guess, what, you know, if they think of Johnny B. Goode, if they know it, they'll probably say that's the Back to the Future movie.
I'm curious if that hasn't gone back around again. That has been, I mean, that's 1985, so that's 40 years.
Yeah.
But it certainly was a seminal moment in the movie, fair to say.
Yeah, which is kind of odd. I mean, it's happening during, to get into, like, again, we assume you've watched the movie, but to get into the plot, Marty is trying desperately to get his parents together so he remains, like, so he
exists.
Still exists in the future or whatever. It was really smart they had, like, a picture where he disappears from and reappears from.
If I can interrupt for a second, I just read that the other day was that they did that, they couldn't do the fade well on the neck of the guitar, so they built the guitar, I'm gesturing with my hands, it was like guitar neck that was 12 inches tall,
really?
And used cable, and the picture was like a 12 by 10 picture.
Huh.
Of them that they blew up, so they said when you see the picture you don't actually see his fingers.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a smart idea, and so he's trying to get his parents back together. You know, this is the pivotal point of the movie. He might not exist. He's really worried. And oh, by the way, we got to go over here and play this song on stage. And it was brilliant.
It's funny because I think it had a chance of derailing the whole movie. Because like you said, we're kind of tying up the plot. So hey, let's play another song. Oh, okay. And it's funny. And it goes on and on. Like, it's funny that they're all getting into it. And it's funny that it kind of goes on and on. And I think there's a point where you're like, can we go back to the movie? Because this part is getting a little bit lengthy.
Yeah, I think when I watched it again, I was like, what's going on here? But I remember the first watch, I was like, I was there. I was like, yeah, he's rocking on a guitar. Nothing matters except this sick song. Did he play the entirety of the song
before? Perfect segue into the other part. So apparently Michael J. Fox was a guitarist ahead of time, and he practiced for play the song.
Yeah.
And he went to Zemeckis and he said, show my fingers. He says, I want to see people pan from me down to my fingers. I want to see people see that's really my hands playing those licks.
Even though on the soundtrack, he doesn't actually, that's not his guitar work on the soundtrack. But
I don't think that's his voice either. So
no, but it could have been his, unlike his voice, it could have been his guitar work. Because like you said, yeah, he had trained for this.
Yeah, and he was a guitarist already ahead of time. But yeah, that was the story I got a kick of. He was like, I want people to know that I'm really playing that song.
But no, he his voice, they got someone in, let me see if I can find their name. Mark Campbell. From Jack Mack and the Heart Attack came in to sing his voice. Apparently, there's something about they didn't really publicize this much. They kind of wanted it to seem like Fox was the one who's actually doing it.
Interesting, yeah.
So this Mark Campbell guy, he got quietly paid for his work on the side, but I don't know if he even got a credit for it. So
I imagine he would have paid, like you said, but. Yeah, so I would say it's Michael J. Fox didn't go on to have a career as a musician, unlike some other pop stars. But is this maybe this is where we let people listen to the song then?
You're listening to that song from that movie on 101.9 CITR FM. So you guys just heard Johnny B. Good by Chuck Berry. What did you think of it?
So, I mean, this was a classic rock song at the time. Once you start playing it, you know, everybody in the audience can go, hey, I know what song this is. And I've always loved the lyric where he says, he never learned to read or write so well, but he could play guitar just like he's ringing a bell.
Yeah.
I thought that was, it's not necessarily humorous, but it fits into it. You couldn't have a mournful song or about, you know, you couldn't have Jimi Hendrix, I'm going to go shoot my partner down or something like that, right?
So, yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, if you think about it, like, it's almost a bit of a tragic song. Like, this guy who all he knows how to do is play the guitar.
No, it wasn't a tragic song.
But it's so fun.
It's a fun song, yeah. This is how he got out of the Louisiana by the Evergreens.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. But no, and it's, like, the other thing is, if you watch the scene, you know, it's a really indulgent song for the guitarist, and that's not just, you know, Michael J. Fox doing that.
That's a good point. They must have picked it for that reason, was that you had to be a fairly good guitarist to pull this song off. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And it kind of lends into, you know, in the movie, at the end, he keeps going on with his guitar solo, and then everyone kind of is like, what are you doing, man? Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty fitting end to it.
Yeah, for sure.
And then
yeah.
He says the famous line. Do you remember it?
What was that?
Well, you may not like it, but your kids will love it.
Yeah, there was a lot of winking and nodding stuff, too, in that movie that made, I think, what made Back to the Future fun was their little aside bits. I always love the part where he meets his family and the toddler, his uncle, is in the crib. His jailbird Joe here, something like that. Better get used to these bars, kid. It's a bit harsh, too, right? But it makes you laugh, right?
Yeah, and now I think about it, this is almost like a nostalgic movie, and I think this song kind of helps with that.
Yeah.
And that's why we were talking earlier that it's a lighthearted time travel unlike the others, but it really is, you know, like a celebration of the 50s kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that I don't think that was the point. I think they kind of fell on that when they did the production design and the art, and they're like, you know, let's make fun of like things like Groovy, and That's Heavy, and, you know, Doc Brown going, Ronald Reagan is the president? What are you talking about? So, yeah. But, yeah, I want to talk about, it's funny because we did talk about Barbie recently, and I remember telling people you should go see Barbie because it's a once a year, not once in a lifetime, but phenomenon that before the Barbie movie came out, people were like, this is kind of a risk. Who knows if Ryan Gosling is going to work? You know, it's just, is anyone going to go see this movie? And it was the same. I want to say it's the same for Back to the Future. It was rushed into production. The test audiences apparently loved it. Michael J. Fox, you're like, I think I know that guy. Christopher Lloyd, isn't that guy from that TV show? And it's got a DeLorean. Why do you have DeLorean? So there wasn't, I'm not saying there's a lot of headwinds that were slowing it down. But, you know, now when we say Back to the Future, there's a whole franchise. There's sequels. There's everything.
MRG Live is pleased to present the legendary DJ Shadow live at the Vogue Theater on January 23rd. Don't miss your chance to catch this pioneering producer performing music from his latest release, Action Adventure, alongside his rich 3-decade-long catalog, which includes collaborations with artists such as Run the Jewels, Nas, and De La Soul, among others. For tickets, head to admitone.com and search for DJ Shadow.
You've been listening to that song from that movie on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Movie Maverick Mike, and you can find me under that name on Facebook and Instagram.
I'm Logan the Extra, and you can find a recording of this episode and all of our episodes on CITR.ca. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you later.